Hey everybody, J-Rock Rude here, and once again, another reminder that if you want more rocking review content, you can follow us on both X and Instagram. That's right, X and Instagram at The Rocking Review. That is R-A-W-K-I-N-G. And a big announcement, we are officially on Apple Podcasts. That's right, you can now view us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and our Castros website at the-rocking-review.castros. That's C-A-S-T-O-S, castros.com. And if you follow us on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify, you can click that notification and follow us to get more content and also be aware of every single time we drop a brand new episode. So once again, you can catch us on X and Instagram at The Rocking Review, as well as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and our Castros website at the-rocking-review.castros.com. Thank you very much. And always remember, it's spelled R-A-W-K because we talk about the W's in pro wrestling. Now, on with the show.
The Rocking Review Podcast, hosted by J. Rock Rude.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the extra most special episode of all time of the Rocking Review Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. And today we are off of what was possibly the most, what would you guys say, mid pay-per-view? Mid WrestleMania ever?
I wouldn't say mid at all.
Mid is a word. Not the one I would use, but.
Anyways, as you can hear, I am joined by my guest, of course, Lucas McGarry and Mike Neckers. Boys, welcome to the WrestleMania 41 post-review episode. How we feeling coming out of WrestleMania?
I'm feeling very positive. Overall, there were some negatives, but like I said, overall, definitely more positive than negative coming out of the weekend, and I guess Monday Night Raw now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree with you. I think the positives outweigh the negatives from WrestleMania.
By a decent amount, too.
I mean, Jason used the word mid.
I thought it was very good. Were there, we'll talk about it, but were there some matches that were a letdown? Yes.
Yes.
It's unfortunate, but again, we're so spoiled. Yes. And I think we all need to remember that sometimes, that we've had some of the best wrestling product ever. Mm-hmm. We're not going to get Cody Rhodes, Roman Reigns, finish the story storyline again. Yes. We're not going to get anything like that for a while.
Nothing will ever be like that build was last year.
3 years of storyline put together. Put more if you want to really dig into it. And that could be its own episode, but all of that, it was so good. So now we're in a time where it's like, okay, how can you get better than that? It's like, you can't.
No.
Obviously you can get back to it, but I think as fans, people just kind of expect too much sometimes, and they want too much. And that's what Cena has been saying this whole time now since he turned heel, is like,
we get nothing. We're getting nothing.
The fans suck.
That's the point.
You guys expect and you want and you just ask and you beg and you whine and all of the above, and it doesn't matter anymore because he's taking all that away.
Yes, we will go into night one and night two because, ladies and gentlemen, this is a two-part episode. That is correct. Night one will be covered on the part one episode, and night two will be covered on part two. So there will be two separate episodes covering WrestleMania in the full night. Ladies and gentlemen,
How about we waste no time further? Let's get straight into WrestleMania Part 1, Night 1. So, before we end up talking about Night 1, let's discuss about a few things that did happen before the show, because there was actually a couple of news that broke out during the pre-show for Night 1. And the most biggest of news that ended up breaking out during the pre-show was that WWE announced that they have officially acquired Lucha Libre promotion AAA and will be running a cross-promotional Worlds Collide pay-per-view in June with NXT. Gentlemen,
that's so awesome.
AAA, for many that do not know, is one of the star promotions in Mexican Lucha Libre wrestling down there. And a lot of people were wondering where AAA was going to go. Of course, you have rising promotions like CMLL that is currently in partnership with AEW.
It's a little funny that AEW announces a Forbidden Door with CMLL, and then not even a week later, we're getting Worlds Collide between NXT and AAA.
Well, because I believe that WWE, you know, the same thing can be said with their promotion with TNA, which we'll go into a lot into part two, which I'm sure Mike is very excited about that. But, you know, with AAA and people saying that it was going to go bankrupt or that there was possible reasons that, you know, the promotion was going to be dissolved, and now WWE coming in and picking up that promotion and now having access to, you know, still a wide variety of superstars, which included, and we'll talk about him later in this episode, Vikingo. Vikingo was in attendance and was there and played a very major role in one of the matches coming up. So he's one of the biggest stars that has been in, you know, the Mexican promotions. But I thought that was the biggest news, and the fact that it went completely, you know, unsniffed from any of the dirt sheets, and yeah, nobody even knew anything.
I saw nothing about this, which means they really kept this under wraps, which is so funny because Triple H always talks about how most wrestling dirt sheets are just wrong all the time, because there is no rule saying a wrestling promotion can't just tell reporters lies.
100%.
Which they do all the time. And I see interviews about how they will just, like, legitimately lie to reporters on purpose just to mess with them, which I love, because it's just wrestling reporting. It's like, it's serious, but at the same time, it's so unserious because you're reporting about something that isn't real. So in the grand scheme of things, it's very funny to think about. Like, would I have that as a job? 100%. Like, that would be awesome to be a wrestling reporter.
So much fun.
I would love to do that. But from an outsider perspective looking in, a wrestling reporter is really, really funny to think about. And that's kind of like why Dave Meltzer gets made fun of so much, which is hilarious.
Well, because old Uncle Dave thinks that he's got all of the moles working for him and he can be able to get all the stuff.
He thinks he's got friends everywhere, and in reality, no one likes him.
Yes. So currently, there is no undisclosed amount of how much that AAA was acquired by WWE. What? Yeah, how much they got off it. Well, because it's like similar, because like when was the last time that, you know, WWE, you know, unless it was like for a developmental type reason, kind of similar to like FCW or like a developmental thing, like the last time WWE ended up acquiring another promotion is just super rare. It's different from their partnership with TNA, where they will allow some NXT or WWE superstars to come over to TNA and, you know, end up doing one of their shows. Recently, Ethan Page will be challenging for the TNA Championship.
I'm going to tune into that one. Me and Mike, I promised him we would watch Joe Hendry's TNA Championship
match. Yes, Joe Hendry, Frankie Kazarian, and Ethan Page, believe, at the next pay-per-view as well.
That's next weekend, right?
I believe it is next
weekend. No, it's this weekend. It's this weekend. It's the 27th.
Yes. Yes, so the next upcoming TNA pay-per-view will be TNA Rebellion. That's going to be from the Gallen Center in Los Angeles
home, I believe, the USC Trojans, if I'm correct. This was one of the big announcements that I remember reporting back in November. But yeah, like, that's the what's different from this. But yes, they will have that Worlds Collide event on June 7th at the Kia Forum. So also another former AEW venue that was quite popular in the Los Angeles area. We also had another bit of announcement that ended up happening during the pre-show. Rey Mysterio, after suffering an injury from what was reported to be a torn groin, was ruled out and could not face El Grande Americano. But instead, we had a substitution, and in only his, what, his fourth match ever? Rey Fénix. Rey Fénix finally got a WrestleMania debut right out of the gate due to injury and was going to face El Grande Americano, aka Chad Gable, later in the night. And then, of course, we ended the pre-show with Bayley had been seen being attacked and laid out, leaving Lyra Valkyria without a partner to face the tag champions of Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez for WrestleMania Sunday. But we will go over that and who she found as a partner in part two. But now it is time to get started with night one. So, like I said in the prediction episode, which unfortunately never ended up getting to air, I said that the mid-card title should be the match to open for WrestleMania. I believe that it's the right tone, and it's the, you know, biggest amount of feel that you can end up having to open the show. I did not expect that WWE, for both nights, were going to have the Raw World Championships on the line in the very first match. I thought that lowered that expectation of it being, you know, much upper on the card. But instead of the opener, which I suggested, which was going to be LA Knight versus Jacob Fatu, we got Jey Uso versus Gunther. And Jey came out after there was some type of promotion with Fatal Fury. Do y'all know about Fatal Fury? This odd game.
I was a little confused with that whole promotion. I'd never heard of it before, but
yeah, for being your center ring advertisement for both nights, the fact that it was something I've never heard of, and I'm not a game nerd by any means, but I feel like some people have to have heard of this, but I have not seen or talked to anyone who has heard of that game.
It says here that it is a fighting series developed by CNK and has been released on the Neo Geo system. So it is it's definitely a Japanese related fighting game, I guess.
It's very popular with some audience. So
I don't know why they would put that for like their thing for WrestleMania.
I thought I would hate the advertisements in the ring. I don't notice them. I could care less.
Yeah, it's just like little tiny things. The same way that UFC really does. And again, this is the comparison of why, you know, people have said that TKO really has ruined WWE, because they've tried to make it, you know, a lot more like UFC, and UFC has, you know, the same type of feelings that you have for wrestling. You feel like there's an unfair, you know, advantage for some of the fighters. You feel like some of the decisions were kind of biased and you don't believe them or whatever. So, you know, there's lots of frustrations with that. But after that, Jey Uso ended up coming out. He was flanked by the Las Vegas Raiders cheerleaders, and he had a bunch of people waving yeet flags all over, and he made his way all the way from the top of Allegiant Stadium down to the ring, and it was just absolutely amazing. His attire looked, you know, it looked amazing. That bedazzled yeet, you know, type of track suit that he had. When Gunther came out, this is what I did like about the entrances, the opening of the WrestleMania gate almost, you know, kind of revealing, you know, what was behind there. It kind of reminded me of the early 2000s MSG entrances, where they would have, I don't know what exact part of that you would call it, but they would have like one of the entranceways just covered, and then in like LEDs it would just open up or whatever. I think the last time they ever used that type of setup was Raw in 2009. And the main event, I can still remember from that show, was a triple threat tag match where it was John Cena and The Undertaker versus DX and Chris Jericho and Big Show. So that's the last one that I remember that MSG ended up using that setup. Since then, they ended up going back to the normal one. Starting off, it felt very slow. I don't know about you guys, but it was super slow. There was no lockups. Apparently, Jay looked to be, you know, somehow favoring his arm for some reason. Gunter looked to capitalize this with a bunch of heavy offense, but Jay fired back with a big strike and eventually landed a body slam in his second attempt. Gunter nailed a superplex and a shotgun dropkick and a powerbomb for a couple near falls, while Jay responded with a spear and an Uso splash. When Gunter tried to walk out with the title, Jay stopped him with a dive, but the ref missed Gunter, hitting Jay with the World Heavyweight Championship, and he went back into the ring, delivered the splash, but Jay barely kicked out. A sleeper hold was applied, but Jay ended up making it to the ropes. The crowd rallied behind him as he fought back, reversing a sleeper into a German and countering a powerbomb and delivering one of his own. I thought that was kind of cool. And then we got to this finish, and I'm going to rip into this finish.
Me too.
Jay unloaded with some super kicks, and he hit a spear and then hit three consecutive Uso splashes with the third aimed right at Gunter's back. But instead of going for the pin, Jay then locked in a sleeper hold, and Gunter tapped out almost immediately, ending his reign and crowning Jay as a new World Heavyweight Champion. And the stadium erupted as Jay celebrated with the commentary team and Pat McAfee, and he came back in and he celebrated with his brother Jimmy, and they exited through the crowd. This finish absolutely killed almost everything for some reason. And I understand that, you know, with the last couple of weeks, we talked about it, the Jey Uso-Gunther feud kind of elevated a little bit with the added hype of, you know, the Jimmy destruction that ended up happening a couple of weeks beforehand, with Jey being tied up and Jimmy being busted open and obliterated and put to sleep by Gunther. But then having Gunther be stopped by three splashes, and then you end up putting him in a sleeper hold, which is his move, and then he just taps out immediately. It just ruins all, like, fear for Gunther. Like, it just feels like there is no hype for Gunther. It makes him look weak. And honestly, if they were going to go that route, I wouldn't have him, you know, willingly tap out. I would have just had him pass out the same way Jimmy did. But what'd you say? What was your thoughts on this match?
I mean, I thought it was a decent match for the buildup that it had. I thought the buildup was really good, and I thought it was underwhelming. I'm not going to lie. I mean,
100%.
Jay and Gunther have been feuding for a while now. There were parts where it was stale, and I think bringing Jimmy into it really revived that feud between the two of them.
Yes.
And for it to end the way it did at WrestleMania, not what I expected. Did I expect Jay to win? Absolutely. I think with how they built up that feud, Jay had to win that match. I don't like how he won. I don't like that Gunther tapped out so quickly in his own sleeper hold.
No, I don't understand why they had him do the sleeper hold. You know, I would have just been fine if it was just an Uso splash and a pin. But, you know, Lucas, what do you think about this?
I fully disagree with both of you. I think that was the only way Jay could finish the match.
Oh, okay.
Jay watched everything pretty much just, like, die in front of him. His own brother, his blood, his everything about his life got, like, taken from him right in front of him. And then for him to just go through that, I feel was very good. I thought the buildup was better than people say it was, because Gunther did a fantastic job of playing.
Oh, selling and everything. Yes, no, he did really good.
He did a fantastic job to help Jay when he was struggling, which was very, very good. And I think that Jay did a good job bouncing back from that. I thought the match was pretty good. It was anything special. But I think the fact that you're saying Gunther is now, there's no fear gone, they're like, all fear is gone, I completely disagree. Mm-hmm. Gunther tapped out one time. This is like his third loss in wrestling.
Yes.
And you know what he did the next night? He put Pat McAfee to sleep.
Yes.
And became even more of a heel.
So yeah.
I think I actually like this side of Gunther, because Gunther is now crazy
and
still a badass. So I think it's going to be even worse for everyone else, including Jay, which is going to make for a really good story because Gunther is just completely losing his mind.
Yeah, and you talked about it. Let's just go right into that. The night after WrestleMania, we had Jay coming out, and, you know, he celebrated with the crowd, did an encore yeet, and then out of nowhere, Sami Zayn comes back. Funny enough, right after Rania, and of course, this is off the heels of remembering, you know, Kevin Owens pulling out of WrestleMania due to his neck injury, and that was the last time that we saw Sami was in his match at Elimination Chamber with Kevin Owens in that unsanctioned match where he lost and was carried out. So now Sami came out and he said that I am so proud of you and I am so happy for you and it is here to celebrate. And it was before Jimmy Usyk came out and when they were both on the top rope yeeting to the crowd and Sami just looked right behind Jay as he was celebrating. And we thought that Sami was going to turn heel right then and there.
Yeah, I was a little concerned for a second. I saw Sami looking at Jay and I was like, what are you doing, Sami? That would have been so funny, but I don't know. That wouldn't have made sense. There's literally no need for Sami to turn heel.
I think that the build might be starting up for maybe Sami to go on a heel run again and him to betray his former Us and again, you know, start up that story with Jay. And I feel like that would be a really good match because of the connection between the two. I still feel like probably Seth is going to take that title off of Jay.
I feel like there's no need for Sami to turn heel. He's just so beloved. And I feel like he's at a point in his career where he's flipped back and forth so much.
But when was the time, when was the last time he was heel? Like, it's been, 3 years?
Right before he joined the Bloodline, he was a heel.
Yes, so
when he was, trying to join them and they wouldn't let him in, he was a heel.
Yeah, so he turned... He became a face. Rumble 23.
A face accidentally winning over the crowd when he was trying to win over the Bloodline.
That was correct, with the Usy gimmick, and I remember that. I don't know. Maybe
he was very big then, but before that... So he really wasn't a heel not that far off.
Too much. So, when he was trying to join the Bloodline, it was kind of kind of funny heel where, you know, he was just getting, you know, a little bit of the heat, but people liked it just because it was kind of new and it was, you know, a very funny character, but, you know, heels are going to be like that way.
No one would have thought the level that he would have joined to.
Yeah, and being able to be brought up from the Island of Relevancy with the Bloodline and have that feud that ended up culminating and that main event of night one of WrestleMania 39 with the Usos and picking up the tag straps with Kevin Owens. But overall, I guess the word I could be saying is it was very overwhelming. We then turn to the War Raiders versus the New Day for the Tag Team Championships. Again, don't know why this match ended up happening and not the TLC match that got announced.
Triple H still thinks that the New Day are relevant.
I don't know.
What really upset me was watching SmackDown before Mania and seeing
there's going to be a ladder match. They're having next a ladder week.
Match
on TC SmackDown. TLC?
Yeah, TLC Friday. Match.
TLC.
Everyone wanted to see that at Mania. No one wanted to see New Day versus War Raiders at Mania. I'm sorry.
Especially when
not hear how loud the crowd booed.
They booed when they said
when
next
Nick
week.
Nick Aldis said that.
Next week. But they cheered when it was
said,
a TLC
Nick
match.
Aldis uttered the word. They heard that he said, you know what I'm going to do? And the crowd got excited. And then he said, next week.
And it was
and the
boo.
Crowd. And Triple H should have heard that right then and there and just changed it.
Change the booking.
Why can't they have a 15-minute ladder match? What is that going to change? It does not need to be long at all. Like, the famous TLC match from the first ever Mania was literally 15 minutes long.
They might interrupt Shawn Michaels coming out and announcing the attendance or Triple H stroking his own ego with his own Hall of Fame induction. And it did later, and it was in this night one, I saw the clip Triple H comes out. He's shaking hands. Bret Hart and Stone Cold, who were inducted for their match at WrestleMania 13 in that submission match. And, like, you could see Bret, who has voiced his opinions on Triple H. He's always been like, what has he ever done, you know, really for this business other than marrying the boss's daughter? And he just, like, looked over at Stone Cold and just, like, scoffed. Because it's like he was there to open up the show. He shows up later to do the, his Hall of Fame thing. And then he shows up at the end of the show, in the post show, to talk about the gate and everything like that and how much money that they're making. You know, it's okay to say about how much money you're making, but also know that, you know, you gotta understand your audience and know what they want. And what they want was not this, you know, dead fart, as I told Mike. It was a just complete dead fart. The War Raiders came out. They had some type of Clash of Clans sponsorship where they were like so dressed corny. Like fools. Oh my goodness.
Eric and Ivar looked so corny.
You know, the War Raiders, as dominant as they were, you know, before they got to WWE, they have just been repackaged so much that it's just killed the gimmick. You know, when they first showed up to NXT as the War Raiders, and they were coming off of their run at Ring of Honor, and having their matches over there, like, they were just red hot, and then they turned them into the Viking Experience, and, you know, they had the competition matches with the freaking Street Profits during the pandemic, and having, like, the bowling, you know, it was ridiculous.
So unfortunate to watch.
Oh my gosh. Not to mention, like, both of these men, Ivar and Eric, have had to deal with, like, almost career-threatening injuries. Eric with his neck, both of them with neck injuries. Ivar, you know, was almost paralyzed for a quick minute. I remember during the match. The War Raiders dominated early. Eric shrugged off some offense from the New Day, tossing both Kofi and Xavier around. And Ivar crushed the New Days with a big crossbody against the apron. The momentum shifted when Kofi landed a senton on Eric through the ropes. I did think that was a little cool spot. The New Day tried to regain control with some tandem offense, but Eric cut them midair with a leaping strike, and Kofi hit Trouble in Paradise, isolating Ivar, who fought back with a spinning heel kick and a moonsault. Woods broke up the pin with a top rope elbow. Eric then leveled Woods with a knee, but Kofi saved him from the finish from the War Raiders. That opened the door for the New Day to land their double stomp backbreaker combo, which Woods then made the cover with Kofi holding Ivar's leg outside the ring to deliver the 1-2-3, and immediately the New Day scrambled to grab the titles and they escaped,
like, ran off,
being the new
tag team champions. Sprint down the ramp,
yeah,
too, which was
sprint hilarious. Down the ramp. Nothing. I hated the match. It was nothing. Should have just been the TLC match.
Triple H, this is the only thing I'll say, Triple H for some reason still thinks that the New Day are, like, legitimately relevant. And I'm not going to say that they're not sort of relevant, but they are not even close to relevant enough to have a 2-on-2 match, just a regular tag team match in that Mania. They're not.
Well, at the end of the day, New Day are the new tag team champs. I'm interested
yes.
to see what
12
they do
time.
With that. I'm interested to see what they do with that.
Yeah, which we'll get into how the Raw after Mania went when we go into part two. Next up, I was excited for this match. I knew this match was going to be good regardless because, like I said, this has been one of the best built feuds surrounding Mania Night 1 that they had going for them. Jade Cargill versus Naomi. Naomi made her entrance. Had new entrance music, by the way. Had a new theme. Thank goodness.
Mike
no more glow.
I was not. I love Naomi's theme.
Aw, man.
Glow.
Yeah, well,
glow.
Well, now it's proceed with caution, Mikey. It's proceed with caution. But the vibe changed when Jade Cargill came out, and they did a fake weather report, like,
that
very
was
so
that
cringy.
Was awesome. I loved that.
It was so corny.
A storm is coming.
I actually thought that was hilarious. That's just like, you don't need to care about it. It was funny. It was corny, but, like, who cares? It was WrestleMania, and
it was
a takeaway from the fact that Jade was
phenomenal. It was her first singles match at Mania, so, like, it had to be, like, some type of way. Of course,
I thought that was hilarious.
Jade came out as Storm from the X-Men. She's been known to do a bunch of, you know, video game references. I remember her iconic, I believe it was like Melina or Jade from Mortal Kombat attire that she had back in AEW. But we started off hot from the start. Jade came out aggressive, tossing Naomi around and slamming her into the barricade. Naomi then fought back with an eye rake, followed by a really good apron-draped X-Factor to the floor and a blockbuster off the steps. Back in the ring, Jade regained control with a tilt-a-whirl backbreaker and a massive jackhammer off the ropes for a near fall. Naomi then tried to counter Jaded by grabbing the ropes, and then she leaped off the top, but was caught and thrown into a fall-away slam. Naomi then hit a avalanche bulldog, followed by a split-legged moonsault for a two. After escaping the Rings of Saturn submission, Jade then lifted Naomi into an electric chair position and then flipped her around midair and then just hit her with a big powerbomb. And then she hoisted Naomi back up and finished her off with Jaded for the 1-2-3. Jade Cargo wins in her singles debut at WrestleMania. I thought this was a very decent match. Like I said, the build was there. I thought that they delivered for what they were expected. And I am looking forward to some major things going on for the one Jade Cargo. What'd y'all think of this match?
Very solid. I mean, Jade's great. And I've been saying this since day one. I am such a fan of Jade Cargo. But regardless of her slip-ups and her botches, I am such a big fan of her. And I think she is going to be one of the top women stars. She already is, but I think she can reach that number one spot, even put her past Rhea, if she really gets going, because her whole aura around her is just superstar. And I don't think there's anything you can do to dispute that. So I think for Jade, it's just not a matter of how, but when. Mm-hmm. And she will be a world champion. That's like my just bold prediction. She will be at some point. Yeah. Just when.
Within the next year.
She's a star, and I think Naomi is such a good person to dance with for her first WrestleMania match.
Oh, 100%.
I thought it was a phenomenal match. Maybe a little underwhelming just because of how built up the storyline was. But I thought it was a great match. Two phenomenal fighters, and it delivered.
Yes. I'm very looking forward to what Jay does next. Like I have suggested, probably going for some type of mid-card title. We possibly could see her as the person who dethrones Chelsea Green. Which, by the way, I do have that report, because I know that Lucas was very upset that Chelsea Green was not on the show. And there actually was reports that, in fact, Chelsea Green was suggested to be the host of Mania 41, but they did not do that.
Couldn't even give her that.
No, I would have enjoyed that very much.
Golly.
Whatever.
I don't know. Give her a match against Zelina Vega on SmackDown, though.
Yeah.
Where she loses.
That's not for the title.
A non-title match that she loses, by the way.
We then had Jacob Fatu versus LA Knight. Jacob Fatu was flanked by Solo Sikoa, and he wore a very nice werewolf-like mask. Of course, made by the iconic artist behind a lot of the creation for The Fiend and all of his attire. I believe his name was Jason Baker. It was made by Jason Baker. The guy who is very infamous for making a lot of Bray Wyatt stuff. Meanwhile, LA Knight, he rolled up in a Maserati. He pulled up right there off the side of the ramp. And early on, Knight took control and nearly landed a BFT right away. But Fatu countered and fired back with a pop-up Samoan drop. Knight then regained control by having some ring post offense outside, including a leaping elbow drop, but Jacob still kicked out, and he countered with a top rope leap with a smooth power slam. Knight later connected with a huge German superplex off the top rope. A flurry of hip attacks later from Fatu and a swanton bomb nearly ended it. Fatu then went for the moonsault, but in midair, Knight caught him with the BFT. I mean, like, it looked cool, but, like, again, it's kind of similar to, like, doing the moonsault and just landing flat in your stomach. The only difference is that probably him grabbing the neck for the BFT and just, like, slamming that a little bit more maybe could do a little bit. Nothing really was, you know, kind of cool, but Fatu was able to grab the bottom rope at the very last second. The finish came when Fatu draped Knight over the top rope and hit a avalanche Samoan drop, and followed by his two moonsaults and 1-2-3, Jacob Fatu in his WrestleMania debuts wins the United States Championship. Quite similar to when John Cena did it back in 04. I think that this was, again, two back-to-back very good matches. Very interested in to see where LA Knight now moves from this. Does he get moved over to Raw? I think that is the possible shakeup, that he will be over to Raw and he could probably, you know, dance with a couple of those superstars. But meanwhile, Jacob fought too.
Yeah, he's a stud. He's so good, both in the ring and on the mic, that it's scary. And he's also just a scary human being. So I think you put all of those together and you once again have, like, the word superstar, because that's what he is.
Yeah.
And this guy was, like, it's so crazy that this guy was legitimately, like, an actual criminal.
They constantly make comments to that on commentary. And remember, he did time.
It's so cool. Not in the cool, like, that he was a felon, but it's so cool that, like, he said, I saw the Usos wrestling on TV while I was in prison, and decided he had to turn his life around.
Mm.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
And now to see where he's at now, all the stuff that he's done, how much success he has now, it's awesome.
And I will say, I think his moonsault is even better than Tiffany Stratton's. So it's not Tiffany Stratton's prettiest moonsault ever. It's Jacob Fatu's prettiest moonsault
ever. It is true. It's true, because, you know, a lot of people will say that about massive heavyweights like Jacob's size, is that when they're able to do moves like that, like, people say the same thing about, like, Drew McIntyre and, like, how big and lengthy that he is.
They should not be able to do that. Look at their 100%. Body types. Look at their builds. Those men should not be moving the way that they do. Beautiful. It's so impressive.
And you look at, like, the big guys that were, you know, revolutionizing in the early 90s, you know, big guys like Vader and Bam Bam Bigelow, and you see them doing, you know, moonsaults off the top. You wouldn't even believe that those guys would be able to get up that high and be able to connect with that move as well as they did. But I'm very impressed with Fatu's WrestleMania debut and his first WrestleMania appearance, and I think that, just like you said, Lucas, that there is definitely a superstar in the making with Jacob Fatu. Yeah. As far as LA Knight, you know, like I said, I hope he goes to Raw, but I'm sure that LA Knight will not, you know, diminish from this. We then went to, this was, of course, I would say the underrated match of the night. I think that, you know, people said some stuff on this match. They said, you know, it's very last minute, and with, you know, Ray being pulled out due to the injury, which that injury was so sudden. I remember seeing it that night before Mania, and, you know, seeing all the doctors attend to Ray and then carry him out after that 6-man tag that he had. You know, I felt bad for Ray. I felt bad because the storyline was just going to be, you know, Ray and Chad Gable, or, you know, El Grande Americano finally fighting out their battles. And I thought that it was going to be, you know, like we said, like a big showcase match for, you know, Ray, especially, you know, this late in his career. But instead, we did get Ray Phoenix, which, again, his debut that he had against Nathan Frazier a couple weeks ago, absolutely impressive. Then he had the match with Berto, and then he was in the Battle Royal, which essentially was the excuse for why Rey Fénix was picked to be in this match, was because of the interference in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, which, by the way, Carmelo Hayes did, in fact, win. But overall, I think that this match was okay. El Grande Americano got this, you know, very interesting filtered entrance with like the cool little filter. And he had like the Mexican band playing him out, and it was just it was super funny.
It was so corny. I love it.
It gave me Breaking Bad vibes, like those scenes where like they like put the filter on the screen. I loved it.
Yes, exactly. Vikingo. So they had announced about the AAA thing. Vikingo was ringside. El Grande was talking some trash to Vikingo. Vikingo, before the match started, hits an enziguri while he's in the crowd.
Cheeky little kick, not okay.
Yeah, oh my gosh.
On a very, very undeserving El Grande Americano.
He's not even signed yet. What is Vikingo doing? Yeah, that's unsigned.
What do you think he is?
Phoenix immediately hit a Hurricane Rana right as the bell rung and went for a quick near fall. He then followed up with some aerial offense and a flying head scissors with a springboard missile drop kick, and then finally a dive to the outside. Phoenix is absolutely incredible. I am so happy that WWE finally got him.
I think he's better than his brother.
Yeah, no. You just look at the different styles, like Penta, you know, is a way more aggressive competitor. Meanwhile, Rey Fénix is more of that high-flying, type of luchador that I think that most people are accustomed to when, you know, thinking about mass wrestlers at the time. Fénix caught himself in the ropes for his signature spinning kick, but Americano followed with a scary overhead belly-to-belly in the corner. And then this move, I don't know if y'all caught it, but it was a reverse 450 moonsault. So basically, like, he went back all the way, and it was almost like a reverse senton. So, like...
Oh, yeah, was that what it was?
Yeah, so...
The announcers were, like, debating what to call that live. I said... reverse 450 senton.
Yeah, it was definitely a reverse 450 senton, because like he went for like the moonsault, but like he went so many rotations. Yeah, he over rotated and just landed perfectly on his back.
Credit to whoever El Grande Americano is. Credit to whoever it is. Fantastic, by the way, and just the fact that you would think that maybe El Grande Americano, this might not even be his true background. He could be like an Olympic wrestler for all we know. And so for him to now be doing this, it's just so cool. And he's just such an impressive luchador.
I couldn't believe, like, that move actually, you know, took my breath away. I could not believe it.
Yeah, that was legitimately, like, jaw-dropping.
That is something to
I've never seen that move before, ever. So that was a first time I've ever seen a move of that caliber. That was awesome.
Gosh. Americano then tried to unmask Fénix, but was fought off. After a tightrope attempt from Fénix, Americano shook the ropes to drop him, and then in the corner, he slid the metal plate into his mask. Ooh. Americano missed the headbutt, with Fénix landing his tightrope kick, which I believe is called the Goodbye Amigo kick. I think that was what it was called. But because he kicked... Americano in the head when he had the plate in this mask, it of course hurt his foot. Americano locked in the ankle lock, but funny enough, it was actually on the wrong injured leg of Fénix.
I saw that. little mess up there from El Grande. It's okay, but
You get what you can give, man. You get what you can give.
And I mean, who's to say that El Grande didn't just break the other leg?
Exactly.
Maybe that was his strategy.
Yeah, his strategy was to isolate the other leg while the other one was hurt, you know? Just
why not
immediately eliminate his high-flying thing? Flying headbutt attempt by Fénix backfired, of course, because of the metal plate. Americano went to the top and finished the match off with a diving headbutt for the 1-2-3. El Grande Americano is 1-0 at WrestleMania, and after the match, Vikingo entered the ring to check on Fénix.
Yeah, I'm Is Vikingo going to stay in AAA, or is he coming up here?
So, what my guess is, and Vikingo has been announced for, and now looking back at that TNA Rebellion.
TNA Rebellion in the,
he will be in that Ultimate, match. Yes, yeah. He will be in the Ultimate X match with Moose, and I think Leon Slater is also in that match.
Yeah, it's Moose, Cardona's in it.
Oh, Cardona as
There's
well.
There's one more mystery guy that we don't know yet, but
probably will be announced.
Five or six have been announced.
Probably will be announced on this upcoming Impact. Yeah. But overall, like, you know, this match was really good. I thought that this was a good performance for Phoenix's debut at WrestleMania, and also El Grande Americano's debut at WrestleMania. You know, for his first singles match on such a stage with as big as a caliber as this one was, I thought that he did absolutely great. So very much looking forward to the story of El Grande Americano and where it goes post WrestleMania. We then had the semi-main event, Tiffany Stratton versus Charlotte Flair for the women's championship. Again, like I talked about, this feud with Tiffany Stratton and Flair looked quite messy, and I was not sure of how well they were going to do with this match. They did what I expected them to do. Tiffany entered first. She stepped out of some type of Barbie type entrance.
I loved this entrance. I thought it was really well done, and I saw an interview with Tiffany after the fact saying that, like, she sees herself as the buff Barbie, so I think they really depicted that very well.
Well, what I've realized, and, you know, the other part that ended up happening over the weekend for WrestleMania was NXT Stand and Deliver. A lot of these young stars like Tiffany Stratton that are coming in, they're not like the diehard indie people that have been struggling on the indie scene, like a Candice LeRae, you know, like Io Sky was back in Japan.
They're WWE developmentals.
They are straight up.
They were 18 years old.
Yeah, they are straight up hired right out of college, brought into the Performance Center, and just immediately put as these big stars, and Tiffany ended up being that in NXT, and then she has came up to the main roster and absolutely exceeded all expectations for her, and now being 25 and walking in to WrestleMania
already
as the champion is absolutely amazing. Flair rolled up in her own car as well. The match opened up with some stiff takedowns and some mat-based brawling as both women fought for control. The animosity was evident from the jump, with commentary highlighting the intensity and the physicality. And again, like, I think that these two actually had some heat on each other at some point or another. On the outside, Tiffy threw Charlotte into the ring post, but Flair came back with a back superplex onto Stratton into the barricade. Back in the ring, Charlotte mockingly stole Stephanie Vaquer's head pound taunt, which, of course, you know, if only Booker T was on commentary, Booker T would be like, what is this?
Only Charlotte hadn't done that.
Oh, my goodness. I, like, it, you know, it looked decent.
She's so corny.
That's the point. It's the point of when she's trying to get heat or whatever.
Charlotte, you're washed up.
She locked in a Boston Crab. It looked more like a Walls of Jericho, I would say, because just like how she had the legs. But Stratton escaped and fired back, delivering her double cartwheel, handspring, back elbows into the corner, followed by a big spine buster for two. She then missed the first attempt of the PME, but Charlotte countered with big boots and delivered her chops. Stratton then avoided natural selection, but Flair nailed a sit-out powerbomb, only for a near fall. The things escalated when Charlotte went for a top rope moonsault, but Tiffany blocked her, and Charlotte tumbled a little bit off of Stratton's back into another spinebuster, but still for a two. Charlotte then hit a flying crossbody, but it was reversed into a roll-up by Stratton, and then moments later, Tiffany shoved Charlotte off the top rope, sending her crashing outside, and it looked like it tweaked her knee a little bit, and she immediately started selling the injury. Stratton showed no mercy, ruthlessly targeting the knee. Charlotte then riled back and began targeting Tiffany's own leg in retaliation, slamming it into the ring post repeatedly. Back inside the ring, Flair then locked in the figure four, but Stratton pounded away at Charlotte's own injured knee to escape. A chop block from Stratton turned the tide as she once again attempted for the moonsault, but Charlotte ended up getting the knees up. Stratton then got cradled, but escaped just in time. Charlotte then went to hit a flying natural selection off the top rope and only got a two count. Charlotte charged up for possibly a spear, but missed and hit the turnbuckle head first. Tiffany capitalized with an Alabama slam into the turnbuckles, which looked absolutely brutal, followed by a rolling senton, and then finally hit the prettiest moonsault ever, clean. 1, 2, 3, Tiffany Stratton pins Charlotte Flair to retain the women's championship. I mean, you know, a little bit mix of emotions for this match, but I was more impressed to see that Tiffany Stratton actually made out and she was able to retain the title. I for sure had Charlotte ending up winning that match, but what did you guys think of the match?
Thank God. It's Tiffany time. All I'm going to
say. It's Tiffany time.
Tiffany won, and I don't think I cheered louder. I don't think anyone else cheered louder than I did, knowing that Charlotte wasn't stealing another young superstar's top spot.
I for sure thought that Charlotte was going to politic her way back 100%. Into the main event spot and be able to win and beat Stratton. But the fact that also clean Stratton pinned Charlotte just shows you maybe that there's a change of heart for Charlotte.
I don't think Charlotte has as much pull as she used to now that Triple H and not Vince.
Yeah, I think if it was...
I don't think she can do all the things she just used to be able to do.
I think if it was Vince, she would absolutely be, like, the champion, like, probably twice over by now. You know, they did that one thing where it was, like, I believe 2016, when it was, like, for 4 months back and forth, it was, like, Sasha Banks and Charlotte Flair. Mm-hmm. I remember, and they would just go back and forth and just have the title change hands on Raw or a pay-per-view. You know,
why do you think Charlotte has so many titles?
Because of all the times that Vince made her.
Reigns.
Exactly. It's month-long reigns followed by a couple of defenses and then ended up, you know, giving it. But no, that did not happen. So Tiffany Stratton ended up winning and
times.
Yes. So Charlotte is 1-1 when it comes to Royal Rumble victories and successfully winning the championship. We then moved on to, by far, the best match of the entire weekend.
Yeah.
Night one main event. Yeah. Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns, and CM Punk for what was deemed for the future of the industry. Seth came in with a flamethrower, lighting up the ramp to burn it down before blacking out the entire stage and then having a costume change in the middle of it and had a full, clean, white attire. Roman came out with white accents on his gloves and his boots. And each of the LED boards coming down had every member of the Anoa'i family in the bloodline.
Yeah, that was really
cool. And I thought that was absolutely amazing. He was just walking through the bloodline, the symbolism that we got from that. And then we got CM Punk. CM Punk started out, and they had a highlight package, a highlight reel of his career behind his OG theme of This Fire Burns by Killswitch Engage, absolutely was a nostalgia act that I think a lot of people were very, very excited about. And then the rumors were true because you just hear, not over the PA, but live, like Mussolini! Look in my eyes, what do you see? Living color. Live and Breathe was in Allegiant Stadium performing Cult of Personality, and even better, Paul Heyman by CM Punk's side. CM Punk came out in the old yellow trunks. We all remember him back in the day. He came out in the gray hoodie, said it's clobbering time. I think that this was by far one of the top entrances almost ever. And I think it very much overdid the entrance that they did back at WrestleMania 29 at MetLife Stadium the first time that Living Color performed Cult of Personality for CM Punk. As soon as the bell rang, Punk bailed to talk to Heyman, clearly playing some mind games with Roman. And one of the key things that happened before the bell rang is Roman had the Ula Fala on. And instead of, you know, usually he would give it to Paul Heyman. Paul Heyman was not in his corner, so he just held it there. And he just looked in the corner and just set it down himself. So I thought that was really, really good. Seth tried to form an alliance with Roman, but got beat down for it. Punk returned, only to be clotheslined out. Roman's early dominance flattered after some trash talk towards Heyman allowed Punk and Seth to double team him. After fighting into the crowd, trading weapon shots, Roman came flying over the barricade with a surprise dive that flattened both men. The action picked up when Punk hit his corner knees and an elbow drop. He climbed again, but was caught in a wild doomsday device with Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins. Roman then hit the Superman punch, and Punk nearly stole the win with an Anaconda Vice, but Seth broke it up with a frog splash. From there, some buckle bombs, some counters, some GTS teases, and finishers were all traded around. Seth finally hit the stomp on Roman, but the Tribal Chief ended up kicking out. Punk landed a GTS on Roman, but that only got a two. Seth got personal, taunting Roman about the shield. He proposed to team up with Roman to eliminate Punk. Roman hesitated, but then betrayed Seth with a punch and then powerbombed Punk through the English announce table. So they were teasing that they were going to do the return of the shield.
Hell no, Roman doesn't
powerbomb. Punk gets powerbombed through the English announce table, and then Seth gets powerbombed through the Spanish announce table. Then he rolls Seth back to the ring, delivers a spear, and Seth still kicks out. Punk then locked Roman into the vise. Seth applied a sharpshooter, and Roman locked in a guillotine, but nothing ended up letting the other man tap out. After escaping, Punk hit another GTS on Seth. This was actually cool. Punk hit another GTS on Seth, kicked out again. Roman then speared Punk, only to eat a rebound stomp from Seth, and all three men were down. And then we got to the finish. So Paul Heyman is sitting there. He's going through it. He's going through the emotions. Who does he help out? Does he help out his best friend or the Tribal Chief? So he comes in, he grabs a chair from the timekeeper's area, and he's just outside, and he looks at both Punk and Roman, and he slides the chair over to Punk. And immediately, Heyman gets into the ring, he looks at Roman, he says, "I'm sorry," and then right behind Punk's back, as Punk is about to hit Roman with a chair, Heyman low blows Punk, and he screams at Punk, he says, "You made me do it! He's my Tribal Chief," and meanwhile, Roman is laughing his ass off. He knew that his wise man was going to be loyal to him. So Heyman gives Roman the chair, Roman takes out Punk, and then Heyman turns and tells Roman that Seth is getting up. And he says, "This is perfect, this is the shield, you can get your payback now." And meanwhile, Seth, he's slowly getting up. Roman's buttering it up. Heyman's still in the ring, and Heyman goes right behind Roman and low blows the Tribal Chief, the head of the table, the OTC, and Roman Reigns is betrayed by Paul Heyman. His wise man turns his back on the OTC, and he grabs the chair, and Seth is sitting there. He pulls his hand out. He reaches his hand out, Heyman gives him the chair, and just like back in 2014, Rollins spikes Reigns with the chair, delivers the stomp, and 1, 2, 3, Seth Rollins wins in the main event of WrestleMania Night 1. And the alliance between the Architect, the Revolutionary, the Visionary, and the former wise man and best friend, Paul Heyman, is now in effect. Boys, what did you think about this stellar main event?
Match of the year.
Match of the year. 100%. I stand by you with that.
There's so much involved. There's so much to unpack in a match like that. It was so good on every single account, all the way down to Paul Heyman right at the end. It was, and like, without all the storytelling, the match was just very good too. Like, it was a good wrestling match. So on top of everything, of all the storyline stuff we got, we also got a very good wrestling match. I think the double table spot with Roman made him look like an absolute monster.
Yeah, he came in here jacked. He
looked like an absolute stud. I think he lost nothing even taking the pin. He still is at the top of his game, and I stand by that. I think Punk looked like a main eventer. He deserved that spot. It was amazing, and I think just for Seth, this is who he's always been. I feel like he can be a good guy. He can pretend to be a good guy, but this is the character he's the best at. Being the guy that's helped out by someone, even if he doesn't need it as much now because he is a legitimate star, I think for Seth, he 100% deserves this ultra push that I think they're about to give him. And then, like, we'll talk about Braun as well.
Yes, we might as well just get into that
Just a fantastic match overall. And now this storyline that they're going into with this new super squad, I'm very, very excited.
Yes, I mean, let's talk about that as you mentioned. The Raw after Mania, the main event, Rollins and Heyman come out, and before Rollins can even say anything or Heyman can say anything, CM Punk comes out and immediately starts, you know, going, you know, bat for bat with Rollins. He ends up trying to attack Heyman, but Rollins comes in and attacks Punk with the eye rake. And then delivers the stomp. And then Heyman says that he is paired now with the reigning, defended, undisputed number one superstar in the WWE, Seth freaking Rollins. And just when you thought that was going to be it, because they showed the copyright graphic.
Yeah, they showed in the bottom. I thought it was done.
And then the OTC comes out. He is here to avenge his loss. And he comes right in, and he just completely obliterates Seth Rollins, spears him out of his shoes, and he hits Paul Heyman with the Superman punch. And it looks like he's about to end it all. He gets fired up, and all of a sudden, a man in a hoodie all of a sudden pops up, and it is Bron Breakker. Bron Breakker spears Roman out of his shoes. And then he looks at Seth just when you think he's about to spear Seth. Next to Seth, he spears CM Punk. And it is confirmed that, in fact, Bron Breakker is now the next Paul Heyman guy. Heyman and Rollins demand that Breakker finish the job. And he spears Roman outside through the barricade and brings him back in, and Rollins hits Reigns with another stomp. And yes, we have what could possibly be Evolution 2.0. You have the vet in Seth Rollins. You have the rookie in Bron Breakker. Now, who?
Are we going to see more guys get added? Or
you know who we're going to see get added? Becky Lynch.
Yes, I did think about Becky ending up possibly doing that. But anyways, yes, I feel like Becky would be a great inclusion into this Evolution Dangerous Alliance staple. And it's kind of cool that Paul Heyman is now setting up his own stable from within. It's not him pairing off with, you know, Roman Reigns, and then immediately his family comes in, and then that's how they end up doing creating the bloodline. But no. What are you all laughing about?
Nothing. I'm laughing about Paul Heyman being a loser and the fact that...
Can I swear on you?
Yes.
Fuck Paul Heyman.
No, I've seen so many memes about Paul Heyman recently. It's just like, it's so funny. But at the same time, I'm still so upset because he betrayed my tribal chief.
Yeah.
So I think the fact that, like, well, you're talking about Paul, I think we're actually going to see, like, a more, like, managerial leader style of a group and not just one person. I would love it if he, like, just forms this group and becomes, like, the mastermind behind all of it. Like, if it's just Seth and Braun, that's totally fine because they're both studs. But I feel like if you add another guy or you add two more guys, you just make this group that is insanely unstoppable.
New Day?
No. Mm-hmm. What? What are you talking about? Spoiler, I think the reason for this build is also so that way they can start building up to Survivor Series San Diego, which will be happening from Petco Park down there. Home of the Padres, by the way. So they will be having that.
Heyman's going to build a 5v5 squad for Survivor
yes.
Series? Okay.
Yes. He's going to build a stable. They're going to run rampant through the summer. They're going to have SummerSlam. You know, probably going to be, you know, Summer Punk. I think if what I believe is true, I think, and, you know, we'll get into it with part two. I have a feeling that Cena is going to join Paul Heyman. And that is going to, because if you think about it, as much as Punk wants to get his revenge now, I think that he should immediately, like, have a couple of matches and then start Summer of Punk, and then he faces Cena at SummerSlam, and then Heyman costs Punk, and then it's revealed that Cena and Heyman are all together, and so is The Rock, and so is Rollins, and so is Breaker, and they create this dangerous alliance that's also the corporate alliance.
Yeah, and now they have that. Corporate and dangerous, that's too much.
Exactly. But that was all of our recap of Night 1.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to this first part of this two-part series of our review on WrestleMania 41. Big announcement. We are on YouTube. That is right. This episode is the first of many of the Rocking Review podcast that will be able publicly on the brand new WNYO website. Of course, that is where you can get all of the other podcasts that will be distributed into our channel and other projects involved with WNYO. So, with that said, thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Rocking Review Podcast. And as always, it's spelled R-A-W-K because we talk about the W's in pro wrestling. Thank you, everybody.